It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Heat's broken again.
Oh.
Not in the same way, though.
Oh.
Like last time it was a flame sensor and it would go tick, 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 and it just would never light. This time just doesn't do nothing.
Mm.
It's like, you want heat? No.
Hmm.
So I'm a little cold. Luckily, it gets up to 70 today and tomorrow, but it's still kind of cold right now, which is why I look like this. They gave me a nickname at McDonald's, which should probably bring me shame.
They gave you a nickname?
The fact that they did give me a nickname at McDonald's.
Oh.
That I'm there often enough that they could decide that.
And what is it?
I'm the cozy man.
The cozy man?
Because I wear the hoodies all the time and they think I look very cozy.
Oh.
I get a lot of compliments on my hoodies. Even the ones that aren't peach colored with a bunch of blue cats on them. People just like them.
Okay.
They're nice.
And like you go to McDonald's pretty regularly then?
Apparently.
Apparently. You didn't notice? I mean, do you go?
I mean,
once a week is pretty.
I think my doctor noticed. I haven't joined the rewards program, and I feel like I'm leaving a lot of money on the table.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
There are two things. One, I love a fast food breakfast, any fast food breakfast. I just love them. And two, McDonald's is one of those places that is its own genre. If I'm craving a hamburger, I am not going to McDonald's. But if I'm craving McDonald's, getting a burger somewhere else will not do it.
Mm.
Like, it is its own thing.
Mm.
Burger King, very similar. Arby's, obviously. So.
But I mean, if you only went once a week, that would probably be enough, right? For you to be considered a regular.
Well, the problem is I stand out. Everybody knows me.
Mm.
According to the old Super Size Me commercial, they call us users. And if you go two or three times a week, they call you a heavy user.
Mm.
To be fair, that was a couple decades ago. Who knows what they call us now? Apparently, they call me the cozy man. Now the Taco Bell guy is going to do it because I told him that the McDonald's people do it. So.
Feel like there's a horror movie plot in here somewhere,
or like an espionage thing. I like that one. It's like, oh, he's the world's best assassin, the cozy man. You die very comfortably.
And when
like,
they,
you know, the gray man.
And when they find man. You, you look so relaxed. They could swear you're just sleeping.
That's me. Or I'm the cozy man because I'm assassin like cozy mysteries where people die, but like nobody seems super concerned about it. And there's not a lot of like violence. It's the same thing. I kill people and people are like, oh, it's just cozy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that was snubbed at the Oscars because the entire script for Anatomy of a Fall was cribbed from our podcast. You got to look through it. It's all there. It's all there. Also made December, but we don't like talking about that one. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 678.
678. Did you watch the Oscars?
No.
Me neither.
So this is kind of, I mean, this is really our anniversary episode, right?
Technically, I mean, in that this is our last episode of year 12.
Year 13.
Year 13. Yeah. This is our last episode of year 13. So, yes.
It is, yeah. Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you. I wonder what.
Technically not until.
It should have looked it up.
Technically not until St. Patrick's Day. That's our.
Yes. 13th anniversary is traditionally beer, so that works good.
What?
Was either that or Irish people, which that doesn't seem.
It was kind of a disappointing third. I mean, our 13th year had our 666 episode on the winter solstice. Obviously, something important was supposed to happen. And then it didn't. So.
Or it did. And we just don't know yet.
Maybe. Maybe. Like.
Maybe somebody was born there.
Yeah.
In a manger that was on fire.
I don't know. I expected something bigger.
We feel a little like the two leads from Good Omens, I think. I think that works. You definitely have an Aziraphale vibe.
See, I've not watched it, so I don't even know who you're talking
to. You didn't read the book either? It's good shit. No, you should get in on this.
Oh.
It's good stuff.
Mm-mm.
Maybe you're the angel, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Or the fallen angel, as the case may be. You get to be Michael Sheen, I get to be David Tennant.
Oh. Yeah, that tracks, I think.
If you're just joining us for the first time, we have a hat. It is magical. In that, it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And peoples out there in the worlds, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with notes, comments, questions, whatever they feel like, basically. And the hat magically forwards the email to us. We read them, talk about it. That's pretty much it. So how's your week been?
What did we see? We saw something. Yeah, what was it? Oh, Wonka. I saw Wonka.
Oh. Uh-huh. Are you big Wonka heads? I didn't know.
So in general, I don't think... What's his name? The guy wrote the book, Dahl, right?
Roald Dahl.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of his in general. And we've talked about that.
Also, recent light, it's come up that he was pretty awful in a lot of other ways, too. But yes, I agree. I am not a fan of Roald Dahl's stories, especially his children's stories.
Yeah, I don't mind the sort of genre of like darkish stories seemingly geared to children. I don't have a problem with that, really. My kids really kind of like that kind of stuff, series of unfortunate events and things like that. And I don't know, maybe that also is, you know, because I used to watch, when I was growing up, I watched Warner Brothers cartoons, not originally made for kids, pretty dark sometimes and violent. And Jim Henson loved to blow things up. I mean, you know, that's, so my history with entertainment that I consumed when I was young that I thought was made for me was sometimes kind of dark too. So I don't really have a problem with that. I just am not a fan of his stuff. Like,
twisted.
I'm just not a fan of his stuff. It doesn't for whatever reason, it doesn't resonate.
I love a lot of dark stuff, but to me, Roald Dahl has always been, I mean, it's not all kid stuff, but the kid stuff is most of what I've experienced. And it's all just the kid version of, the world is shitty and shitty people are shitty.
Yeah, I guess. And
I don't like that in any of my other media either.
Right, right. But I did like the Gene Wilder, film, and I still think it's really clever and well made, and Gene Wilder does just a fantastic job. And I didn't mind. And I think in general the whole Willy Wonka idea and stuff, I think I do kind of like that, because like when they made the one with Johnny Depp, I kind of liked it too. I didn't like it as well as the first one, but I think I would like watching either one of those films rather than reading the book, for example.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't.
I did for school at some point, I believe. Didn't care for it either.
Yeah, I don't think I ever will. I mean, I've talked to people in depth about who have read it, and it's like, yep, not interested really. I think there's something about the Willy Wonka character that I do like. I like that idea. I like, some of the things in both movies, which means I'd probably like some of the things in the book, but overall, I don't think I would care for it. But anyway, when Wonka came out, I thought, well, no, I'm interested in that. I don't really understand the hype around Timothée Chalamet at all. I've never seen him I mean, he's fine in everything I've
Have
seen
you
him in, but
not read Josh Brolin's poem? Come on.
what?
Josh Brolin wrote a poem about Timothy Chalamet's face
Oh.
while they were doing Dune. Apparently, it's a thing Josh Brolin does about lots of people. He just writes poetry, but like he wrote one about Chalamet that was picked up by the news. And it came up again recently for me because Josh Brolin hosted SNL this week, and part of the monologue was talking about that and doing jokes about that. But it boils down to Timothy Chalamet is a very handsome young man.
I mean, he's a competent actor, but I don't know. Oh, so what you're telling me is that people think he's good looking and that's the hype around him? Is that
I
what you're
mean, not
saying?
entirely, but that definitely helps.
Oh.
I was mostly just making a joke that people who got the reference might have found.
Well, anyway, so I wasn't like, I guess I didn't, people said it was almost a prequel to the Gene Wilder thing, and I thought, no, not when if you're casting Timothée Chalamet, no, I don't think so. And I still feel that way after watching it. It's like, no, that's not, he was the wrong guy to cast if you were looking for that kind of vibe. He's not a
Yeah,
great
but
singer.
Yvonne Little's dead.
He's not a great singer, but he's fine. The musical numbers were not good. Like, they were like high school musical numbers, not like Broadway level musical numbers. I really don't
Now
like.
wait, when you say High School Musical numbers, do you mean the musical numbers from the movie series and TV series High School Musical,
No.
or do you mean musical numbers on par with a high school's musical production?
I'm more talking about the kind of productions that a lot of high schools can put on because of they can't afford the royalties of like a Broadway show or whatever. So they're getting like off, way off Broadway stuff where the songs aren't that great. And they're also not that challenging to sing or play. So that's another reason why the school might pick them. And it was not, these didn't, none of these, there was one number that was almost, that I thought hit sort of that Broadway pitch, and the whole production around it too was good. That was just one part of the whole thing where it's like, ah, here you go. Here's a good Broadway level musical, Broadway level production. There's some dancing. Yep. This is what all the numbers should have looked like in this film, and none of them look like that. So that was disappointing. I mean, I'm not a big musicals person anyway, but if you're going to put music in, make it good music. And it wasn't very good, I didn't think. And he was fine, but nothing really compelling about his performance. So I was kind of disappointed because I'd
Go
heard
back to
so.
Grant.
That whole thing was just weird.
He hated it.
He hated it.
Apparently, he had to wear some contraption on his head for mocap that was very uncomfortable. And he was also did the whole thing never being sure if they were just capturing his face or his entire body. And he still doesn't know if the bodily movements are also him. Apparently he did them, but he doesn't know if they're him.
I doubt it. I mean, they looked very natural for what you saw with the Oompa Loompas in the, yeah. I mean, which I presume they found someone of that, of those proportions to do those movements. Cause otherwise I don't know how they could have made it look so natural. I don't think it was him. Because in the film, you know, they didn't just take him and make him a foot tall. You know, they gave him the same proportions and the same overall look as the Oompa Loompas in the Gene Wilder movie. So the visual effects on that were fine, but I don't know. I just didn't think it was very good. And they're going to make a sequel, I think, or whatever, because it's making money, I guess, in the box office, but I'm not really sure what the draw is. Are you even interested in seeing it?
Oh, no. Not even a little bit. I knew that from Trish at one point theorized she might try and make me see it, and I could be dragged into it. I'm not be offended to watch it or anything, but yeah, I have as little interest as is humanly possible in seeing it. On just a variety of levels. I mean, it's a kind of movie I don't like, in relation to a movie I actively don't like, in relation to an adaptation of a story I actively don't like, from an author who I like less and less all the time, and it has bits in it that I find problematic.
Right, so, right.
That's like, that ticks all the boxes.
All the boxes, like, yeah.
If somehow Wonka had snuck in a rape scene, it would just be the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So
you didn't like the Gene Wilder version either?
To be fair, I'm not 100% sure I've seen it all the way through, but most of the scenes I've seen, I don't like. I found him quite scary in it, in a way I did not enjoy. I think he did a great job. I don't like the material. I didn't like watching people do that, even if they did it very well. I think the grandpa should have been shot in the head at the start of it. He's a terrible person. Charlie is barely a good guy. Like, Charlie's supposed to be the icon of, you know, he's the protagonist, and he's just slightly less shitty than everyone else. in both iterations, although I've never actually seen, again, I've never seen the Johnny Depp one, Willy Wonka seems to actively dislike children, which I find to be such a weird choice.
Well, I mean, I think
there's a lot of fetishizing of food and things that I might have appealed to me when I was younger, but now I find problematic. I don't like things with shitty children, and it's all shitty children. The moral implications are insane. The lore doesn't make sense. No.
See, this is just one of those things that, like I said, when I was a kid and I saw it, I really liked Gene Wilder's performance. And again, something about the basic idea appealed to me. Not so much the execution per se, like the whole idea of, you know, because of course in the book, and this carries through to the films, the idea is it's not disliking children. It's disliking, you know, bad children, which, like you said, problematic all the way through with, you know, what's going on and what happens to them and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think being an actual child and liking Gene Wilder's performance in that might make you a sociopath. I'm not sure.
No.
See, no, I was a child who loved Gene Wilder's performance in Blazing Saddles.
Well, yeah, I like that too.
That may hit the key differences here, but you know,
I liked him in Blazing Saddle. I liked him in Young Frankenstein. I liked him in everything he was in. But I, but I just felt like it was, I don't know, like when I was talking to Abby about it and I was thinking about, so there's a scene in the film where they're in a boat and they're going through a tunnel and there's these crazy.
Yeah, I do like that. I don't understand it, but I do like that now. I didn't like it then.
And that is, to me, that scene doesn't make any sense. It doesn't belong there. It's, I remember when the first time I watched it, and now if I watch it, I'm like, okay, so I kind of have to tune out right now because this is dumb. But Gene Wilder thought of something to do with that. That I have always thought from the beginning into this day was very, somehow very clever. It worked. I don't think overall it works. I think it's a weird thing to put in the middle of that film, and it overall it doesn't work. But he figured out, to me, in my observation, he figured out something to do with it. That's like, I mean, if I were him working on that project, I'd be like, can we just cut this out? Because I have no idea what you want me to do here. It doesn't make sense for the character. It doesn't make sense for the plot. It doesn't make sense for anything. But I think he figured something out that did work as much as anything could work in that moment. And I've always sort of admired that about his performance.
See, and I love that part, but I have to tune out the rest of the movie.
And I like that World of Pure Imagination song or whatever. I always thought that was good.
I actually just recently heard that somewhere. I don't remember. Somebody recently did a version of that I heard. Oh, it might have been at a choir concert I was at recently.
Oh.
It doesn't. It is, when you break down the lyrics, those lyrics are not, they don't make sense. And for starters, it opens the song by rhyming imagination with imagination.
Mm. I like it. Kenny Loggins did a good version of it.
Was that his weird children's album thing?
Yeah, yeah. But it was good. It was very soothing to listen to. It helped our youngest get to sleep. He'd listen to that whole
musically,
album.
Musically, I like it. Lyrically, it's insane.
Wow. So yeah, I mean, I've always sort of liked just the Willy Wonka thing. And I'll probably watch another one just because that character interests me, but I want to see them do interesting things with it. And I thought Gene Wilder as an actor did do something interesting with it, whatever else was wrong with that film. And I did think that Johnny Depp did something interesting with it. I wasn't as impressed with what he did as with Gene Wilder. So I was hoping that at least, you know, if I didn't like anything else about this film, I'd like what Chalamet brought to it, like what he did, but I didn't sense that he did very much. Like I didn't get much out of it as in terms of his take on the character. So, but that's my view. I'm sure a lot of other people really liked it. I know they did because it's making money, but it didn't do anything for me. I'll probably watch the next one though, just to see if they do anything else with it. How was your week?
Wonka 2. Die Wonker. I assume it would be a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory remake again.
Mm.
Because otherwise it has to be in an ever-increasingly small window of
sort of the Zeno's the end paradox.
Of Wonka, but not the start of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Or the Zeno's paradox of sequels. Get halfway exactly. Halfway to Charlie, halfway again,
exactly.
Never quite get there.
It's like what they were hoping to do with Harry Potter. and Hunger Games and Twilight.
Yeah.
My week was all right.
Are you going to pull up the list? What's that?
It's Xbox controller.
That's what it is, a pink one. Is it pink?
Red, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
We bought an Xbox.
Oh, you didn't.
Series X.
Yeah, you didn't have one.
No. And we bought Game Pass Ultimate.
Okay, so you were saying there was a game that you might play if it was on the Xbox Game Pass, but you wouldn't pay money for it. What was that?
There are a ton of games like that.
Well, there was one we were talking about. I don't remember which one it was. Diablo. You thought you might play Diablo that way.
Yeah. It's not there yet, but they have announced it is going to show up. There are hundreds of games. And I have been losing my mind. I've been playing all of them. I've been playing the old original Fable because all the old Fables are on there.
Oh, wow.
I've been playing Hi-Fi Rush, which was one of the big games that made me want to get it. It's a really awesome game that's only available on PC and Xbox. It's a rhythm action game, sort of a sci-fi thing. It's done very comic booky style, but the idea is you're this kid who has a busted arm, and so he volunteers to be part of this experimental procedure to get a cool robot arm. And due to the hijinks, basically his iPod, his music player, it looks like an old iPod, gets stuck in his chest and replaces his heart. And so several things happen because of this. One is he's listed as a defect, and so the whole company and its robots are trying to kill him. But also, the beat of it affects the entire world around, and so everything everywhere moves in rhythm with the songs. And you fight and platform and things, but you have to do it in these rhythms to get higher combos and higher points and everything. And it's just so satisfying in a really, it's a very cool sort of style also, but it's just very, because you really have to like get into the music to fight. And it's just very simple, light attack, heavy attack, and various combos and stuff. And then there's dodge and things, but it's the whole key to it is getting into the zone of the music. And it's a lot of original music for it, but it has some real stuff. Black Keys has been in there, Nine Inch Nails. The boss fights frequently have like known songs for them. And it's not normally, I've recently discovered a few genres of game that I really like that I never really knew I liked. And one is sort of rhythm titles. So this is not the kind of thing I've ever really played before. It's also a little more physically active than I usually play nowadays. I don't play a lot of action things and stuff like that these days, but it's really satisfying. Also got the old SSX snowboarding game on there. A bunch of ones I haven't done yet. The whole Gears of War series, because another genre that apparently I really like are third-person cover shooters. Unfortunately, I'm about a decade too late to anybody making those. But one of the major versions of that was the Gears of War series, which had like 5, 6, 7 games, and they are all on Game Pass. All first-party stuff from Microsoft gets on there. Other things show up for about a year and go away, and apparently often don't come back. So like there is a game on there that looked really cool and I downloaded and I found out it's going to be gone in like a week, and so it'll probably never come back. They have lots of cool indie ones. I grabbed this one called Cocoon that I haven't tried yet, but it's, you're this little bug and there are these worlds, but you can pick up the worlds and travel into the worlds, and you can pick up a world and travel into a different world. And like that changes the mechanic, and it's a puzzle solving kind of deal. I got Starfield, of course, because I'm very excited about Starfield. I haven't played it yet. I got Outer Worlds.
Yeah.
There's Outer Worlds and Outer Wilds, and I always mix it. Outer Worlds is on there, so I downloaded that one as well. There's a lot of things that are first person that I would not spend money on in case they make me sick. But now I can try it out. So Outer Worlds, Dishonored, I always wanted to try. I've got like 15 games I downloaded already, and I just keep hopping around different games. So I've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, we liked Outer Worlds and Dishonored, both of them. We liked all that.
So yeah, we'll see how those hold up. But I'm very excited. I've been playing a lot of it.
You used to, I mean, you played Fable back when we were working together, right? Isn't that?
I have played Fable to completion more than any other game.
And you loved it.
I did.
You really loved it.
I am not enjoying the original one as much now. I don't know entirely. Some of it is their updated controls that are more like the later ones. I don't know. I'm just finding it harder. And honestly, I've played it in various forms 6-7 different times all the way through. Maybe I'm just, I don't know. I've been trying, but I'm finding it more frustrating. Well, it doesn't help that the old games, you can play them, but you have to jump through some major hoops because you basically have to log on to old Xbox 360 servers.
Mm.
And I, at this point, I have to put in my Microsoft password every time I play it. Mm. And unfortunately, that meant I had to change it to something brand new. I'm not going to forget it anymore because I enter it every damn time I do this. But that's been a little bit frustrating there. But yeah, there's just so many games. I'm very, very pleased about that. So I'm playing a lot of that. I'm still playing some Cemetery Keeper on the thing. I haven't played Red Dead in a few days. I don't know. I have very conflicted feelings about it. It's an amazing game. I'm not in a good headspace for it. I'm in the part where it's starting to get darker and darker. And part of me's like, well, I should finish it. And then another part is like, why? I mean, you kind of know how it ends because it's a prequel.
Yeah.
But also, I'm a very big believer on when it comes to media as a whole. If you're not enjoying it, don't do it.
Right, right.
And I'm kind of at a place where I'm not enjoying it as much. So I don't know. It's on sort of hiatus. But also, if I take that to the extreme, I'll play every game for like one level and then be like, oh, this is getting hard. I'm going to switch to something else. So you have to. Sometimes you need to put a little effort in for the payoff, but we'll see. So yeah, lots of video games right now. We started watching the TV show Death and Other Details.
Hmm.
Murder mystery starring Mandy Patinkin. Murder mystery on a cruise ship. It has been very interesting. I'm enjoying it. It's very entertaining. It's really got me thinking about the two different axes of a show being really clever and intelligent and a show presenting as really clever and intelligent. And those are not the same thing. Those are two separate axes. You can have shows that present as really stupid and simple that are actually quite clever and involved. And this is a show that really wants you to believe it's very smart, and it is very much not.
Mm.
And it also thinks you are very dumb. It repeats and flashbacks so many things. Mm. It is very melodrama-based. It is one of those where every time there's a new twist, oh, this person was lying about this. Oh, these people are in cahoots. Oh, what package did they have? Like all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm like, they'll say these really eloquent lines that I'm like, yeah, that wasn't, you didn't really say anything there. And, but then other shows, the best example I can think of is Arrested Development. Arrested Development's supposed to be very stupid and presents that way, but that is such a layered and nuanced and complex show.
Yeah.
And I don't think about that. I think a lot of police procedurals give the impression of being very clever and seldom are very clever. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So yeah, something about this one is real, because it's also, the cruise ship is also just all the uber rich. It's saying a lot about class and wealth because it's mostly billionaires and on it. And, but it's very entertaining. So we'll see. We will probably hit up some of the big Oscar winners. Although I was pleased to learn when I saw who all was nominated for Best Picture, most of those are not movies I want to see. So it makes things easy on me. But we will probably see Poor Things because it is on Hulu. And I really wanted to see it, and then I learned a little bit more about it and think there's some things I'm not going to like about it.
Mm.
But I still kind of want to see it, so I think we'll probably... I'm trying to get a little bit better. If one small aspect of a film is something I don't enjoy, if I can just sort of like hold my breath through that one bit, and get a lot out of the rest, maybe I should try that one. But we'll see. Went and saw a play.
Oh, what'd you see?
It's called The Revolutionists.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing you sent me.
Yeah. Part of a series that Mount Vernon's local community theater is doing of sort of smaller productions when they're not using the theater for other things. And this is, well, we heard about this because a coworker and friend of Trish's, he and his wife both act very heavily in community theater in the region. And so we often go see things of theirs. And his wife was in this, and so he sent an email to a bunch of people about it. And so we're like, okay, we'll go see it. We thought it'd be good to get out of the house. Honestly, at first I was into it, and then once we had decided to do it, I was like, eh, I don't know, because it seemed like it was going to be a difficult one.
Oh.
It is three significant female figures within the French Revolution, specifically Olympe de Gouges, who's a playwright who tried to advocate for equal rights for women and eventually got guillotined. Charlotte Corday, who's the young village girl who came to Paris to assassinate Marat and accidentally made him a martyr and got guillotined. And Marie Antoinette, who was the Queen of France and got guillotined. And then a fictional fourth character who's actually inspired and sort of a conglomeration of a lot of Caribbean and Haitian revolutionaries that was going on at the same time. But it's the playwright is approached by the other three women. They need her help as a writer in various capacities. And I was like, this isn't going to be fun. And also it turned out the thing was like 2 hours long. And I was like, oh my God, 2 hour long play with four people. It was really good. It was not a hard watch. It's largely a comedy, although it deals with very serious stuff. But it was a very easy watch. It was enthralling. It didn't feel too long. It had two actors I've seen before in things. Well, three actually, because of the wife also, who played Marie Antoinette. But one of the other actors, something about her performance tipped me off, and I checked the program later, and she had been, when I saw a show called The Agitators, that was Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass and their sort of friendship and things, and a lot of like, what if they had talked about this and stuff. She was Susan B. Anthony in that. And she was really amazing. And yeah, it was a really thought-provoking, intriguing, and very entertaining play. I'm really glad I saw it. It was very good.
Good.
Yeah, The Revolutionists. I would recommend it to anyone out there. I saw Ezzy, but only just recently. I think that's pretty much all that's going on. Saw a really shitty found footage ghost hunter kind of movie, and it was shitty not because it was like bad acting or whatever. It was basically, other than a couple of things that I'm just like, yeah, that would never, that's clearly done for effect or whatever. It could have been just an episode of an actual ghost hunting show. Like, basically nothing happened. and I'm like, why did I watch this then? We just had a couple of like, oh, there's a figure in the background, or they found some witches doing a ceremony and then the witches saw them and they had to run away, but like nothing came of it. We didn't learn anything. And when two of them got home, their daughter was acting weird, and so now they're scared about that. But that was it. Like, nothing really happened. Okay. So yeah, that's it. I think that's about it. I can't see you no more because of cat.
Yeah, I can't see you either.
Maybe she smells the dog on me. The neighbor's dog is getting to like me, so he and I hang around a lot.
Hmm.
And then I come back and they smell the dog on me and they find that weird. I tell you the neighbor's got dog?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neighbor's got dog.
Yep, you told me.
It's a good dog. All right, do us that email.
Okay. This one is from Stuart.
Stuart. Stew. Or as they say, native Welsh.
Would you ever...
People think I'm making fun, but I heard Rob Brydon say that exact thing on a recent episode of Would I Lie to You? So I'm not making this up.
Stu says, would you ever consider going car-free if public transport or biking were readily available? Basically all through college, I was car free. I didn't come here with a car. I did have friends with cars. And, when I was first married to my first wife, she had a car, but, parking was such a hard thing in Iowa City. I mean, I walked everywhere. I'm pretty sure for the first 4 years of school, and I would take the CAM bus sometimes to things, but I lived in Coralville and worked in Mercy Hospital downtown. You know how far apart those things are. I would walk to work from Coralville even because either I didn't have access to the car, or I didn't want to bother with parking or anything else. So I'd just walk.
That's at least a few miles.
It was a nice walk, though. Yeah. You know, it was a good way to keep in shape or whatever.
Probably not so much in the winter.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. So,
the city buses are free now.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they are totally free now.
That's
the thing that happened a year or two ago.
But I mean, riding buses is not comfortable for me. I get motion sick, you know, There's no good place to sit where I won't get motion sick on a bus. But, and a lot of times from where I lived, if I took a bus like to a stop near where I worked, it took a long time. I mean, walking did not actually not take that much longer than if I'd taken a bus. So a bicycle would have been good because I've always been a bicycle rider since I was really young, but I didn't have a bike at the time. I do have a bike now that I could ride places. But then there's, again, the problem of where do you put it, and you have to lock it up or you have to carry it up to wherever you're going. So, but I don't mind walking.
I'm looking very thoughtful at the moment, if you're wondering.
What about you? Car free?
I don't know. This is a difficult question. The short answer is probably no, but not because I don't think it's a good idea. Up through college, I didn't even have my license till I was like 20, 21. I didn't have a car till after I graduated, but I find the idea very interesting. And of course I've lived in certain places. If I lived there, I would, in more urban environments, I would. I think it would be easier nowadays because it's so easy to take things with you. So your commute can be full of reading books and listening to podcasts and surfing the net on your phone.
I would read when I walked. That's another. I mean, the way I got through all the Isaac Asimov novels is I took an hour or two to walk to places, and I just read those novels as I walked.
And you didn't bump into things?
I bumped into things.
I had a friend of mine who we went to the same gym, and she frequently had physical books. That she'd be doing the elliptical and she'd have an actual book. I couldn't. I would watch movies or listen to podcasts and stuff, but an actual, like, while I'm exercising, I can't be doing that.
I don't know how I did it, but I did.
I ponder this sometime because I don't have a lot of schedule anymore. So the time factor, which is the biggest argument, is gone. My wife occasionally thinks about getting like an e-bike because those have become really cool and they make you way more mobile, even if you are not physically fit enough to bike everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she's discovered that there are actually really militant camps on the bike versus e-bike debate. But there are too many factors, and one of the big ones is I am not comfortable around groups of people very much anymore. And so the idea of like riding public transportation regularly kind of freaks me out. Now, to be fair, if I did it for a while, I would probably adjust quite quickly. But I mean, I think the answer is no, because I think I am in the exact situation Stu has described. Public transportation is readily available and free. And I don't do it. So apparently I would not. I like the idea. I think more people should. Cars are such a huge part of pollution in the world. It basically goes multinational corporations and then cars. Well, okay, planes and cars. But yeah, I look to doing things like getting a hybrid car or an electric car, things like that. But I don't ever think of just like skipping it entirely, which is probably says something terrible about me.
Well, I mean, you've got family that lives far away. I mean,
well, yeah, I'm not a bike to Illinois.
That's right. Yeah, I don't see my family enough the way it is. So I'm not going to give up when someone could say, well, you could bus there, I suppose. But
mega bus.
But that's less time I get to spend with them because I have to have more time on the bus, you know. So, yeah. I mean, we have one car. We're not really inclined. We don't want to have more than one.
We occasionally think about it, but the truth is very rarely would we even use it. If we had two cars, 90% of the time, we would still just be using one.
And we were thinking about this the other day. This year marks the 20th year we've owned a Prius. So, I mean, so we try not to, but of course, you know, since the beginning, people pointed out rightly that even Priuses and the batteries and stuff cause environmental issues. So,
well, and the whole thing of a new car versus an existing car, because correct. Creating a car produces a whole bunch, but it's all so much theater. Are you familiar with Liquid Death?
The canned water?
Yes.
Yeah.
Liquid Death has always been hilarious to me because it is the most direct example of successful marketing of irony. Their product is not water. Their product is irony. Mm. And was for so long. Liquid Death is just, like, one of their slogans is it's just water. But like, it was water that's badass. And all the ads were like very metal. And young people were like, isn't it hilarious that they make it's just water, but like, it's all like they make it like it's a big deal, but it's just fucking water. And they bought it sort of ironically and it became successful. And I've always found that hilarious. But apparently I haven't been keeping up because they have pivoted now.
Oh,
for starters, they have flavored water.
I didn't know that.
But also, their big thing now is it's environmentally conscious. Yeah,
no, so, that's so.
My brain makes the same face you just made because the neighbor kids got into it, and the neighbor kids even convinced their parents about this. And what it comes down to is an aluminum can is, and this is technically true, more environmentally conscious than a single-use plastic container.
Technically true, yeah.
Yes. So it is environmental in the sense that it is only the second worst. Because that's the thing. Yes, if you're buying single-use containers of water, the metal one is more environmentally conscious than the plastic one. Mm-hmm. Both of them are still terrible. And there are a bajillion other options. And the fact that they want to claim it as, you know, environmentally responsible is ridiculous. But everything is full of that. That's the thing. It's like, if we can find something out there that's a little worse, we get to say we're good. And it's the same thing with the hybrids and the electric cars and things like that. It's like the answer is far more complicated, and it's all theater. It's all pretend. Mm-hmm. And again, most of the environmental damage going on is not even at the consumer level. It is at the supply level, but we keep consuming it. So the supply is it's a cycle. We're all interdependent here. The corporations are doing the shit that really pollutes, but they're doing it because we buy the shit that they make from the things they do that really pollute. And I don't know. I've been having this with a lot of things lately. Like, I was watching a stupid Try Guys thing, actually, where they it basically was a game of Would You Rather, but it was all done as a series of trolley problems. Like, it was the theme was that it was a trolley thing, but it would be like, if the trolley goes this way, you do this thing, but if you flip the switch, you'll do this thing. Like, and it has nothing to do with trolleys, but one of the early ones involved a standard killing people versus not kind of thing. And the first contestant was like, well, actually one of the contestants was like, no, I'm not touching that. I just leave. I was not here because I don't want to be involved. And he's like, and I'm not worried about the killing because we're constantly killing people through inaction and things all the time. Like, you're not sending money to save kids with malaria. So a kid just died with malaria and then the second contestant was like, no, I'm going to save a life. He's like, well, while you were saying you were going to do that, you just killed a kid with malaria. And which is not true, but also is true. And it's other than as aggregate policy, these are not useful distinctions. Like, how the automotive industry works is a conversation of which you can put forth evidence and so forth. What kind of car you do or do not buy, you individually, means nothing. I could come up with factually accurate arguments in every direction. And you just got to go with sort of your, I mean, that the play I watched had a lot of this too. Like, right and wrong kind of don't exist except on a personal level. So you just have to do what you think is best, and by all means put as much energy and thought and logic to it as you can or are willing to, but know that it's just your best guess and that it's not right or wrong, and it's going to have all sorts of consequences that you can't foresee.
But that the other side of that is, we should pause then before we judge other people for the choices they make along those lines.
Yes. Yes. Very much so.
Yeah.
And we should stop trying to convince people. You can say, here's what I did, here was my line of thinking, but not like what you're doing is wrong instead of this thing because blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
'Cause there's always another layer. It's the good place thing. It's all more complicated now. It used to be you buy a thing of flowers for grandma and that's good. And now you buy a tomato and it's really bad because it turns out slave labor was involved and like all sorts of things. And,
right.
And people do really selfless, really difficult things that make a good difference that I feel really bad about, but they all have other things. There's always something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're always, you have to pick your cause. And you're always sacrificing for something else. And it doesn't mean, this is a very nihilistic view. It doesn't mean, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
No, it matters to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to figure out what matters to you. Mm-hmm. But be aware that that doesn't make you right.
Right.
And it doesn't make other people wrong.
All the people wrong. That's right. I mean, this feeds back into the thing that you and I have often talked about how important it is to me. Maybe this is just my opinion that this applies, but maybe you can speak to this too, that how sometimes it's the whole notion that we decide what things mean. There's not a universal objective meaning to things. We decide. Which we should feel, I think, we should feel liberated by that. We should also feel maybe a little humbled by that. And I think a lot of people who want to make absolute judgments about what's right or wrong and good or bad, they want to insist that meaning comes from somewhere else. You know, there's an objective meaning that comes from somewhere. I don't know if it's from God or the cosmos or wherever it's from. And they try to use that, the objectivity of that meaning to sort of browbeat other people into doing things their way. But I just think it's, I mean, people can have whatever beliefs they want about God or meaning or whatever, but on some level, from a science of human behavior level, what it looks like is that people just make it up.
Yeah.
And no matter what your opinion is of God or the cosmos or whatever else, or if you think there is some kind of source of objective meaning, well, that's okay if you have that opinion, but in the realm of fact, there's no evidence that meaning comes from anyone else but just us. And I think we need to treat each other and ourselves with the kind of respect that that reality sort of comes with.
Yeah, the people who are saying what would Jesus do are still deciding that they want to make their decisions based on what they believe Jesus would do.
Right, right.
Which is a perfectly valid option.
Sure.
But it's, you're making that, it doesn't make you right or wrong. You don't know. This is the thing. I've been watching a lot of things lately. Maybe not. I've been noticing a lot lately in murder mystery things. I was watching After Party and watching Death and Other Deeds. I've been watching a bunch of these kind of things. And there's a very common deal where people don't want certain people investigated for fear that something could come up that could implicate them because they know that person didn't do it.
Right.
And I have seen this in situations where the person in question has already told other people, like, the best way to prove somebody's innocence is to find out the actual guilty party. We need to investigate there's no direction we shouldn't be going because we're trying to find out the truth. Mm-hmm. And then in a later scene or episode, when it's somebody they care about, they're like, no, we don't. And insofar as you do not trust the legal system, I understand that one. But this idea that, like, I know so-and-so didn't do, like, that's not a thing. you believe that. Similar one to the one I see where everybody fucking promises things all the time.
Yeah. Right.
They, like, can't stop possibly doing that. Because also, it only seems to ever fucking come up when they break it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, stop doing that. People think they know a lot of things that are actually things they just believe.
Which is fine. It's okay.
I'm constantly with it. I recently So you remember the people watching cartoon, the animated things they had on Cracked for a while? Mm-hmm. We were kind of into those.
Yeah, they were pretty good, I thought.
They were. That artist has done other things with Cracked originally. And recently, Jordan Breeding had one on there about concussions. And this is a thing that I am feel very strongly about. It's part of why I don't watch American football, because I find the concept of it sort of reprehensible. And this video was largely about misunderstandings of concussions and CTE. And I would say the bulk of it came down to it's not nearly as dangerous as you think it is. And it doesn't, based on evidence, it doesn't generally have the same long-lasting effects that everybody's assuming they have. And actually, like, retired football players frequently have more content, functional lives than average people when they retire and stuff like that. And it was a bunch of stuff I didn't want to hear. And it made me very uncomfortable, and it made me not like the channel. It was animated by those same people, but it made me not like the channel and not like the video. And then I was like, but it's not like you looked at the data for your earlier beliefs. I believe the bulk of my earlier beliefs came from a segment on an episode of Adam Ruins Everything. So how are you so confident that that's more correct than this YouTube video?
Yeah.
Especially since it also comes from a source that up to this point you have considered to be someone who does their due diligence on these things. And I realized that I don't know. I am fortunate in this incident in that I also don't give a shit about sports, and I find American football boring in addition to possibly reprehensible. But I have a lot of deeply held beliefs that are based on people that I thought I trusted telling me those beliefs, or it making, as much as I hate to say this, it making sense to me, it making common sense in my head. And sometimes I need to be reminded that that's where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean I can't have those beliefs, but I need to recognize them as beliefs, not facts. And that other people having different beliefs aren't necessarily more wrong because they probably have as little data as I do.
Yeah. I mean, you've always talked about how many of the things that we think, believe, things that we think are factual even come from, not from us having experiences or doing the experiment or whatever else, we're trusting somebody else, right, to have done all that work and due diligence. And when they tell us the research says this, or this is the fact of the matter scientifically, we just believe them, right? Like I think black holes exist. I go through the world thinking they're real. Do I know they're real? I mean, by my own personal experience, by my own crunching the numbers that Einstein crunched to come up with that hypothesis, or the astronomical data that people think they've gathered that prove to them that this is real. No, I haven't had those experiences. I haven't done those things, but I believe all the people that have. And so that's an example of a thing that is in the realm of fact, right? It's in the realm of science. So there's probably an answer, not an opinion. And yet for me, it's still merely a belief based on what this person has said. So yeah, there's that distinction between opinion and fact, but as you've often pointed out, there's also a distinction between the facts I know because I've experienced them myself, or, you know, they're in my day-to-day life or whatever, and the facts that someone else tells me that I just believe because they told me.
Well, and the one I always put up, and this doesn't necessarily work for you because you're too big of a nerd, but climate change. I don't know shit about climate change. I have chosen to believe because the general consensus in society, and specifically within the scientific community, is that it is real. And I have been presented with a lot of supposed evidence on the subject. But guess what? I don't even know that the scientific community is largely in consensus about it. I haven't talked to the scientific community. Yep.
Right, right.
People
right.
tell me this all the time. and so insofar as you can, you need to evaluate why people believe what they believe. And you should always be questioning that kind of thing. But, oh, and I hate saying this because it can be taken so easily out of context. But if you are investigating evidence to the best of your ability and investigating the possible motivations for people expressing certain beliefs, if you are doing your due diligence on that front, a bit of a rule of thumb, honestly, can be if the vast majority of people believe it, I'm probably going to believe it. That's not the only reason, but I'm like, as long as you're looking into why do people believe X, why do people believe Y, like all other things being equal in a discussion, if it comes down to, do I believe the thing most people believe or the thing few people believe? Probably going to go with the most people believe.
Well, that's often likely because people care about belonging more than they care about belief. I mean, you get this when you talk to people who used to hang out with neo-Nazis and ask them, wow, tell me how you became a neo-Nazi. And what they're expecting is the person had some bad experience with a black person, or they were raised by someone who had a particular set of beliefs. And they almost never say that. When you ask them about their beliefs and how their beliefs impacted their choices and everything, I wasn't really that committed to the whole neo-Nazi thing. These were just the people who were nice to me. The people who made me feel like I belonged to a group just happened to be neo-Nazis.
You get that in a lot of religions as well.
Yeah.
People join religions because they make friends with people.
Yeah.
And those people have beliefs and they make them sound good and they go.
Right. And when you see, like in social media, that is so much more about belonging than belief. That's so much more about likes and things like that. So many of these people, if you ask them about their political or religious beliefs or philosophical beliefs, they can't even enunciate them. They just know they're part of a group that says these things and does these things. It's more about belonging than it is about belief. But I think intellectual honesty kind of demands, I mean, that principle of intellectual honesty demands that we can distinguish between fact and opinion, between facts that we were only just being told, so we don't really know, but also that introspection we can use to say, I really just like all the people who believe in this. I when I'm with them and we talk about our shared beliefs, that feels good. But I have to admit, if I really dig in, it's not really about that.
We are sometimes fortunate in that nowadays via the internet, there is much less consensus. So that influence, at least for me, is less common.
Mm.
Where if I'm like, well, everybody believes this, so it's probably true, because it's never everybody anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Everything. I have a lot, and I'm very wary of any conspiracy theories, mostly because they seldom have evidence. Mm. The only evidence I have seen for most conspiracy theories is this thing doesn't make sense to me. Which is not the same as evidence. I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's not the same as evidence. And if that's what you've got, then I don't know. But the one that I've been doing a lot suddenly, I don't know why this never occurred to me before, but is why? Why would there be a conspiracy over the flat earth one? I think I've talked about it on here before. If the earth was flat, who benefits from convincing us all it's not? Why would that be a conspiracy that would take millions of people and billions and trillions of dollars and centuries of history? Why? Like chemtrails and shit, I get. I mean, I also don't believe in those, but I'm like, government's trying to mind control us. They're spitting stuff into the air. It makes us all like 2.5 men, whatever. But what's the flat earth benefit? What do you get out of that one? The moon landing, a little bit similar. I can see an argument to a degree. The moon landing is just, I actually like Mitchell and Webb's version of that. Basically, it would cost about as much to fake the moon landing to the degree they did as it would have just to go to the moon. So
that's good.
But yeah, I don't. All this stuff just makes me not like making decisions anymore. I have no confidence in any decisions I make.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I would even be okay with that if I felt that most people were that way. But it's really tough being in a crowd of people who are certain they are right. And the only response you have is, I don't believe the same as you, but I'm not certain I'm right. Because the room is going to be like, well, then we're probably right. And to a degree, I'd almost be like, yeah, I guess you probably are. I mean, just on the numbers, but.
Well, and then that belonging piece comes in where it's like, you do feel like you belong to this group, but you have a disagreement that they might construe as you don't belong.
And then that I am lucky that I don't like belonging and I never have. Okay. I'm also very unlucky about that. I actually have been dealing with that in therapy recently. The difficulties that come from being unwilling and unable to feel, to identify with a group or others, but it does help in situations like that. I don't tend to join in on things that I don't feel comfortable with because I don't tend to join in on things. If you'd like to join in on things, be part of the best group out there, right into the magicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, because that is a close, tight-knit, small, elite group of the best people ever. And I have evidence to ironclad evidence to back that up. I will not share it with you, but I have it. Trust me. Also go to the blog and tell us what you think about how CTE is affecting the climate. And also, do you have a car? And is it because you don't want one, but someone gave it to you, and now you don't know how to sell cars? Because we could help with that. Whatever. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us your thoughts on these things, because it's not interesting when we just do it by ourselves. So you should also say things. Be the podcast you want to see in the world. or listen to, as the case may be.
Yeah.
But please write in. We got that lovely upsurge of emails. We haven't gotten a lot lately. We're getting low again. We could use some more. Really digging them. Just remember, Carmen Sandiego put the miss in misdemeanor when she stole the bean from Lima.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.